With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So I have spent the better part of the last 5 months traveling the country.
Tom Schultz is the chief of the U.S. Forest Service, testifying recently before Congress.
This notion that somehow we aren't supporting employees is not accurate, just so we're clear for the record. We are supporting employees. There has been reductions, as been stated, but it's also because we had to balance our budget. There was an opening comment about a $750 million hole, which is true. We walked into that. So there have been efforts that we have put in place. But what we're doing, just so the committee is clear on this, there are the administrative bureaucracy that we have created within the Forest Service. It caught last 5, 10, 20 years. You go back. We are focusing on readdressing how we're staffed with what positions. So our focus is the people that are on the ground doing the work. If we have mid-level management positions, we're looking to put those folks on the ground doing the work of the public. So we have 30,000 employees. I just want people to realize we have 30,000 employees in the Forest Service right now. So to suggest that we don't have enough, I take umbrage with that. And what I would say is that any one office that you talk to, which I talk to a lot of offices, and I do hear anxieties. People are anxious about what has happened. They're worried about doing the work. But we also have to look at how do we reform the process that we do our work, and how do we make sure that the people on the ground are supported with the right level of staffing. It might be we have to move someone from a mid-level management position to doing the work on the ground. And that's the piece that we're going through right now.
And as part of this, USDA relocating the Forest Service headquarters from Washington, D.C., to Salt Lake City as part of a major restructuring effort aimed at improving forest management and decision-making, move designed to place leadership closer to the majority of federally managed forest land, which is, again, largely located in the western U.S. According to leadership, shift is intended to streamline operations, improve response times, and better align management with on-the-ground conditions. Restructuring also includes closing regional offices, redistributing responsibilities to field-level leadership. USDA officials continue to say the goal is to improve efficiency, strengthen partnerships, and support timber production, which includes forest health nationwide. Farm bill negotiations advancing in D.C. with agricultural lenders and policymakers focused on improving access to credit and addressing rising production costs. Ed Elfman is Senior Vice President of Ag and Rural Banking with the American Bankers Association, says lawmakers moving closer to a new bill after years of extensions with potential House action expected soon. Livestock Risk Protection, or LRP insurance, gaining traction among cattle producers as a flexible tool to manage price risk in a volatile market. LRP allows producers to hedge actual herd sizes rather than relying on standardized futures contracts, and it offers a more tailored approach to risk management. Program uses feeder cattle index pricing, which helps reduce basis risk and better align coverage with real market conditions. Also offers cash flow advantages, premiums not due until the end of the coverage period, which means producers only pay if market prices remain above insured levels. And if prices fall, indemnity payments help offset losses, making the tool more accessible for operations with limited capital. It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
Operation Epic Fury and related military operations in the Middle East have led to supply reductions in crude oil, natural gas, and fertilizers, all of which impact farmers.
Mark Rosenbaum is a senior research analyst at Terrain.
This has led to significant volatility in both commodity prices and input prices. This volatility creates risk, but also opportunity. On one side, these disruptions have caused a noticeable increase in a variety of ag-related inputs. Those prices have gone up between 4 and 60% through the week ending March 13th, with anhydrous or urea up at least 25 to 35%, and diesel up at least $1 per gallon. Commodity prices have also risen through the week ending March 13th, with some of those gains being erased more recently. Corn and soybean futures were both up about 6% from pre-war levels, but have given back half or more of those gains recently as of March 16th. The combination of these two factors, higher input costs and current crop prices, are what matter for farmers. Let's take a look at how projected margins have changed. For corn, amongst the volatility, projected margins were higher through March 13th and were above both pre-war levels and recent lows following the January WASDE. Lower prices to begin the week of March 16th have erased part of those gains. The blue lines here show a margin estimate for a farmer with minimal inputs pre-purchased and where no crop was priced ahead. The green line is a farmer who had all inputs bought before military action started and no crop priced ahead. The orange line is a farmer who had already priced their expected production for 2026 between October and December, but did not pre-purchase inputs. These three cases highlight the range of outcomes possible from the current volatility. For soybeans, higher energy and fertilizer prices don't factor into input costs as significantly as they do for corn. So if you hadn't already priced your soybeans before March 3rd, the recent price rally had improved your projected operating margin. The relative margin between corn and soybeans has experienced an increase in volatility since the war started, but has returned to similar spreads seen through parts of February. This suggests, at least for now, there's not likely to be large shifts in acreage relative to pre-war expectations. One major exception to this would be the case where certain inputs become unavailable. Here are the likely outcomes resulting from the war. For those who purchased most of their fertilizer and fuel prior to March 1st, this run-up in grain prices has likely improved projected operating margins. For those buying inputs now and who do something to lock in prices or protect margins now, current average margins for both corn and soybeans are similar still to where they were a month ago. The worst-case scenario, and one that I hope this video helps farmers avoid, is where higher-priced inputs are purchased now, but some price risk is not taken off the table. The war resolves enough to lower energy and fertilizer prices, and grain prices retreat, squeezing margins. The window of opportunity that this volatility has created may be short-lived if the war resolves in just a few weeks' time, or longer-lived if these energy and fertilizer supply disruptions persist. Right now, I encourage everyone to rerun their 2026 margin projections based on current prices and your cost of inputs, and consider if it makes sense to protect some downside price risk in the event that grain prices move lower. Don't forget there are other factors that could influence these prices too, including upcoming trade talks, the South American crop, and weather in the U.S.
But finding export markets, do we need a weak or a strong dollar? Matt Clark is executive head of Terrain.
The dollar has only slightly weakened compared to currencies of our top trade partners. This weakening can act as a light tailwind to exports, but it's unlikely to dramatically push additional or previously unlooked for exports. Supply and demand fundamentals will continue to be the driving factor for exports. The U.S. has ample supplies of many commodities and needs additional global consumption.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
It's a very broad-based story, but I would say your younger farmers, those just kind of starting out, those who are renting a lot more of their land, those who don't own it as much, their margins are just inherently tighter, as opposed to those who own everything that they're farming and they're, you know, kind of been building up cash for years.
Mike Castle is senior commodities economist with StoneX.
To give you kind of a closer to home example of this, a couple years ago, this farm sale took place in central Missouri, caught all these headlines. It sold for like $35,000 an acre. As the crow flies, that was like 5 miles from my family's farm in central Missouri. And this was not some investment group coming in and buying this up. This is not some development. This is small town central Missouri. None of that's on the table. This was two farmers competing against each other, essentially. And it was older farmers who, again, presumably probably own everything that they're farming. They've been sitting on these piles of cash for years, and this farm only comes up for, you know, sale once every several generations. So they're going to jump on it regardless of what it costs. So the reality is, if you're just getting into this, that's what you're competing with. $35,000, no matter what you're growing in central Missouri, I promise you cannot make that pencil. But that's the reality of what you have to compete with. So that's kind of why farmers are incentivized to take on so much debt. And, you know, kind of zooming out bigger picture to the U.S. in general, we did see a pretty notable uptick in farm bankruptcies in 2025. I think the number from Farm Bureau is like 315. And it is worth pointing out that's significantly below pre-COVID levels. You know, they were 500 plus, but I would say regionally speaking, the ones that really stood out, the two highest states were Arkansas and Georgia, who we don't really think of as, you know, your primary ag states, right? And I think part of that is a function of the folks who are growing crops that are not as protected. They don't have the same safety net from the government like we do on our traditional bulk of our production, your corn, soybean, wheat guys. We've made, you know, significant improvements to crop insurance programs. There's, you know, more of, again, a safety net from the government. There's farm payments. Not every crop gets that right. So if you're growing something that doesn't have that same level of protection, you're immediately at a lot more risk. Now, as we look at this current year, if you want to talk about what margins look like, it's pretty ugly across the board, but regionally speaking, I think most exposed to the current conflict is going to be places like the Northern Plains. Like, these guys are much more urea heavy. That's kind of where the biggest price shock is on the nitrogen side of things. Obviously, everyone is looking at higher diesel prices. Every pass you make with equipment is that much more expensive. But talking again about the Northern Plains folks, they also have some of the lowest cash grain values just as a function of their distance from end-use demand. So their margins are extremely tight. Anyone growing wheat this year, affordability looks terrible from an input perspective. There's no real way to sugarcoat that. But again, from a even bigger picture perspective, while we do have issues here in the States, the ones that are most exposed to these disruptions in Iran specifically and just the Strait of Hormuz more broadly is not us in the States. It's really other parts of the world, whether that's in Europe or in Asia or in Australia, or just developing economies. Those are the places that are going to feel this the most, in my opinion.
Says this run-up in fertilizer is not an apple-to-apple comparison.
We broke the record for the worst it had been for several portions of last year, and now we're starting 2026 easily at the worst it's ever looked at this time. So that's one thing to kind of not lose sight of is, okay, well, we're not as high as 2022. It can't be that bad. The reality is we're not getting the benefit on the output side of it like we did back then.
It's Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
With Agriculture Today, here's Tony St. James.
So we have insect and disease information that we collect nationally, and we just actually updated that. We update it every year, but it was just updated over the last 5 years with data sets. So we know where those insect and disease areas are.
21st Chief of the U.S. Forest Service is Tom Schultz.
We also model where we have high, very high, moderate risk of wildfire. So we can see that on maps where that is. In terms of the impact of roadless, typically what we see in the roadless areas, since those areas historically have not been managed, insect and disease rates are higher. And then we typically have more downed woody debris. I mean, if you've hiked and recreated in wilderness areas, it's not uncommon to see a lot of down material, and it's not removed. So it's not uncommon that we see those conditions in roadless and wilderness areas.
Representative Bruce Westerman from Arkansas is chairman of the House Natural Resources Committee.
You know, if you look back historically over the past 3 or 4 decades, we saw things like the roadless rule in the West and a weaponization of the Endangered Species Act result in closures of many mills in the western U.S. As a result of that, we saw increased imports from Canada. We saw no forest management on many of these stands out west, and now we're seeing catastrophic wildfires. Now, I know the chart that was referred to, it's just data. It shows how much was harvested over time, and it shows how many wildfires we've had. And we also know that correlation doesn't mean causation.
But Chief Schultz says the problems in our forest didn't happen overnight.
If you go back to the late 80s, the Forest Service was harvesting about 12 billion board feet a year. And then the spotted owl decision came out right around that time, 88, 89, and you see a precipitous decline in timber that was offered. And there was about an 80% reduction. So we have to keep in mind when we talk about timber sales on the national forest, I made the comment a minute ago, it's not just saw log removal. When you look at any timber sale contract that the Forest Service offers, especially if it's a stewardship contract, there is a tremendous amount of work that is done, including removal of non-saw material as a part of those contracts. So the work that was being done when we look at those timber harvest numbers was not just removal of saw logs walking past all this other material. There was, whether it was burned, whether it was brought out of the forest, but there was a lot of other forest management that was occurring in addition to saw log removal that did, I would argue that it did have an impact on the fires. And the other thing you got to keep in mind, when you have active management going on, you have contractors in the woods. People tend to forget this. Logging contractors in many cases can be first responders. So they're the first ones to see a smoke out there. And in many cases, if they have a timber sale contract, their contract requires that they put the fire out if they're somehow in their vicinity of their timber sale unit. So having people on the landscape, it's kind of like having ranchers that have permits on Forest Service ground or BLM ground. If there's a fire, those ranchers, having that person on the landscape is going to be much more effective in putting that fire out than not having people in the landscape. So I would argue that a couple things. One, that overall forest management and reducing fuel loads and reducing the overall saw log volume, both of those things contributed to some of that. And then what you see happen is that we have this precipitous decline, and we're down to, you know, roughly 2.5 to 3 billion board feet from a 12 billion board foot harvest level. And we can argue, was 12 the right number? But I would argue that the level we're at right now, we need to do more to protect our communities, and both from a wildfire mitigation perspective as well as in terms of rebuilding some of the infrastructure in the rural communities that we have.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
This has been Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally sold thousands of acres of grassland in Texas, New Mexico, Colorado, and Oklahoma. Our inventory on ranches is as low as it has been in years. We really need listings on ranches of all sizes. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698.
This is Agriculture Today.
After a surplus of milk in global markets pulled down milk prices at the end of 2025 and into the beginning of 2026, prices rebounded sooner than expected.
Ben Lane is senior dairy analyst with Terrain.
That surplus isn't fully alleviated, but a mismatch in the supply and demand of individual commodities is sparking volatility that could provide a lift to some milk prices and opportunities to hedge going forward. Cheese and butter typically drive milk's value in the U.S. These higher-value consumer products drive the prices of Class 3 and Class 4 milk by determining the values of protein and fat. The byproduct of cheese manufacturing is whey, and the byproduct of butter manufacturing is non-fat dry milk. These powders have headed for export markets historically. As a result, most of the high-value milk has remained in the U.S. where it can capture its highest value in the form of butter and cheese, while exports have been heavily skewed towards skim solids. Through late summer and fall 2025, commodity prices for butter and cheese collapsed. Whey was the only exception, with growing demand for high-protein powders reducing the supply of sweet dry whey. Non-fat dry milk had been lackluster throughout the turbulence, but through January and early February, prices for the commodity skyrocketed. Consumers are undergoing a variety of shifts domestically and abroad that are shaking up those traditional component mixes. These shifts have been playing out over different timelines, but they're converging in the current market. The byproducts are now stealing the show. First, there is a near-term, though I expect persistent, shift in consumer demand for protein versus fat due to the growing adoption of GLP-1 medications. Estimates point to around 8% of Americans taking GLP-1s as of 2024. That's likely higher by this point and will increase as new pill forms and other varieties are developed. Importantly, the impact isn't isolated to those taking the drugs. Some 16% of households include at least one person using GLP-1s, and food purchasing patterns will likely change for the entire household. New products being developed and marketed will likely appeal to a broader set of consumers than just GLP-1 users. In the medium term, pressures are driving changes at the macroeconomic level. Inflation for food away from home has been persistently higher than food prepared at home since March 2023, meaning that eating out has become more expensive more quickly than staying in. This matters for dairy demand because Americans tend to eat more cheese-heavy dairy away from home, think pizza and cheeseburgers, than when they prepare their own food. Food service is also an important outlet for butter and cream. Long term, aging populations both domestically and in many of our key dairy export destinations will influence demand. In the Big Shrink research series, Terrain analysts detail the impact of aging populations on agriculture. For dairy, aging populations are a mixed bag. In the U.S., younger people in their key pizza-consuming years have been shrinking as a share of the total population, while those over 60 who are not eating nearly as much pizza have become the fastest-growing segment. Meanwhile, alongside the aging populations abroad, incomes are rising among populations in many of our export destinations, and demand for higher-value and higher-fat dairy products like cheese and butter are climbing. The net result of these shifts is that a bigger share of U.S. milk fat production is looking to export markets for value, while skim solids are trying to sort out ways to capitalize on strong protein demand at home. This means cheese and butter are increasingly reliant on export sales. This is fine, except when world prices are low. U.S. prices need to fall to remain competitive. In the case of non-fat dry milk, not only have world prices improved, giving domestic prices a boost, but supplies were already relatively tight with the stream of skim solids looking for ways to deliver protein elsewhere in the value chain. Non-fat dry milk prices climbed from $1.18 per pound at the beginning of 2026 to over $1.60 per pound by early February. This has dramatically lifted Class 4 milk out of the doldrums, with futures prices over $18 per hundredweight from March onward versus a January price of $13.55 per hundredweight as of this writing. Class 3 milk has improved less dramatically but is supported largely by whey prices of between 70 cents and 75 cents per pound. Cheese and butter prices have improved from their lows but to a lesser degree. If they continue to improve, it would provide even greater support to prices later in 2026. But for now, it's the powders that have provided the strength.
It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine Cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine Cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
The K-State Focus on Feedlots is essentially a summary of feedlot closeout and performance information. So it's data that we collect via a survey from five different cattle feeders, mostly in western Kansas.
Kansas State Beef Systems Specialist, Dr. Justin Wagner.
What's really unique about the Focus on Feedlot effort that we do here at K-State is this is the only publicly available source of real-time feedlot closeout and performance data. And so that's pretty unique to K-State. The other aspect of the Focus on Feedlots is there's also a historical data set. So we've got the data archived electronically for 35 years now. So we have a 35-year data set to work from. And so it's just really unique to have a data set that has that much longevity, but is also one of the few sources of information in terms of feedlot industry numbers and cattle performance.
He breaks down the data set that goes into this survey.
The data that we're going to talk about here today is reflective of five feed yards, mostly in western Kansas. So 23,000 head of steers will be represented and 15,000 head of heifers. So average days on feed for this January 2026 closeout was 184 days. The heifers were on feed for 175 days. I do want to point out in terms of the range, we also seeing some cattle go well over that 200-day mark. The range on the steers was 162 to 221. And the range on the heifers was 155 to 216. So certainly seeing those cattle feeders carried some of those cattle well in excess of that 200 days on feed mark. If we think about average daily gain and those traditional performance, you know, measurements, we can talk about those a little bit. But steer average daily gain, January 26th, average was a 3.82. Range was 3.4 to 4.25. So over 4.25 pounds a day on some of these bigger cattle, that's fairly impressive. As we look at the heifers, 3.43 on the average, 3.11 to 3.8 on the range there in terms of average daily gain. Feed conversion, 6.4 on the steers, 6.7 on the heifers. We are seeing some of the heifers, you know, push into the upper sevens in terms of feed conversion, but still very favorable fed cattle performance here outside of those heifers that maybe gave up a little feed conversion later in the feeding period. If we get into death loss numbers, we often talk about, you know, what is average death loss in the feedlot industry? And this is a month where we're really probably right on trend line for both the steers as well as the heifers in terms of death loss at 1.25 on the steers and 1.49% on the heifers. In terms of cost of gain, so this would be average cost of gain on the cattle in terms of the closeout month. Average was 100.86, so with a range of 89 to 113, and that number is per hundredweight on the steers. And then the heifers were at 108.34 with a range of 95 to 120.47 on the heifers. So 100 and 108. So we do see about an $8 spread between the steers and heifers, which is fairly common as well. As we move into kind of the place numbers and commodity prices and projected costs of gain, fairly strong consensus this month across our feed yard managers in the survey. With projected cost of gain for cattle that would be placed on feed in February, so mid-February, 100 on those steers and 107 on the heifers. So in terms of our commodity prices, average corn priced at the feed yard was 457 a bushel with a range of 440 to 475. Alfalfa hay, we record that as well, and that was 139.20 per ton with a range of 127.60 to 155 per ton on the ground alfalfa hay across those yards.
And this is Agriculture Today.
The planting season is right around the corner. You can't afford to be down when it's time to go. Wiley Implement and Spray Center, your Case IH dealer, can get your equipment ready for the season and keep you running. We also have a great selection of new and used planters for the upcoming season. Depend on Wiley's 13 locations across Texas and Oklahoma. Find us at WileySprayers.com.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.